Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Clint Ruckus.
And Brian Keller's actually on his way to TechEd in Atlanta.
Yes, yes. He's actually in the U.S. versus somewhere in Western Europe.
Yes. So, we've still got a lot of news to go through, and probably the biggest one is Microsoft acquired Skype.
Yes.
So, certainly big news, $8.5 million acquisition. And some of the things, just a quote from the press release, is how it's going to be, you know, our longtime focus in real-time communication across various platforms, Link, Outlook, Messenger, Hotmail, Xbox Live. So, and it's going to support Xbox, Kinect, Windows Phone, and a wide array of Windows devices. So how's that for quoting from a press release? So what does it mean for developers, though? Because this is a developer show. And I think one of the things people may want to start looking at is some of the APIs that yes. Skype has to expose their services. So they call it Skype accessories, which can be a little confusing because you think of accessories, you think of like Bluetooth phone.
Yeah.
This includes both hardware, meaning you could actually sell handsets, for example, as well as software.
Yes.
So they do have a public API reference. They do have a Skype comm object that you can use as well and some samples to go through. But it basically is all the things that you would get access to as a Skype developer. So you can actually read and write to both the audio and video streams.
Yes.
So, which is really cool.
Speaking now, of audio stream writing,
yeah.
This is an application Coding for Fun wrote a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Two, almost 3 years ago, and it allows you to change your voice in Skype, so then you can be like, you know, the creepy guy, or.
I love that you go to, finally, I can be the creepy guy on Skype. Everyone, look at me.
I think we actually did a Channel 9 post on this actual.
Yeah, like, you were remote at the time,
yeah.
And I think I was recording you doing the different sound effects.
That was kind of awkward because I think we were switching from headset to cell phone to headset.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to figure out stuff. And the funny thing was,
to record the audio.
Yeah, I couldn't even hear what the voices sounded like.
Yeah, which is an important point because you can't actually hear what sound effect you. So you probably want to call yourself.
Yeah,
they have that self-calling thing, and then you can actually record it.
But what this application does use is the comm object, so I think it was called Skype for Comm, and it goes through and talks about how we both pulled out the audio stream from Skype and then reinserted it back in, along with messing around with the audio stream.
And a lot of that is based on Mark Keith, who a lot of people know from N-Audio.
Yes.
Which really does the hard work of doing the sound cool-ass sound effects, so...
Yeah. He also did the .NET audio auto-tune application.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, but for people that want a real-world example of AV, or audio, I should say, examples using the Skype for Comm, check out the Skype Voice Changer, all open source. So, new show on Channel 9, Visual Studio Toolbox.
Yes, with Robert Greene. So, this goes and talks about the productivity power tools in Visual Studio. I know you have them installed.
Yeah, so I love them. A couple of my favorite features is the ability, for example, to turn your scroll wheel into a visual representation of your whole source code, so you can kind of jump around.
Yeah.
And you can, if you mouse over, it'll show you the code within that section.
That's cool.
So, like, hey, I mouse over, and I'm like, ooh, I'm at that class, and then I can just jump to that directly. Another one is the ability to pin files that I'm going to use all the time.
Okay.
So, like, while we were using Jelly Bean, the primary things I was using are, for example, the Kinect wrapper and the Jelly Bean code behind for the UI page.
Yep.
So I just pin those, and I have a bunch of other classes, stuff I'm doing, but that way, you know, in my 20 wells of files, I can easily jump back to those.
Yep.
I mean, those are some of my favorite. There's so much more in here, and Robert walks through a lot of this stuff. And for features people aren't necessarily familiar with, or if you've never even used the productivity power tools.
Yeah.
This, to me, is a must-have install now.
Okay.
Python tools for Visual Studio.
Yes, so this is a nice little... takes over, basically, the IDE. It's an IDE for Visual Studio... I'm sorry, for Python using Visual Studio.
Right.
So it's not just Iron Python. You can use C Python. think one other. No, it supports CPython and IronPython.
I think they even have some more. So and different libraries. So check out the full list, because I did see some more on there. This is actually by the Microsoft Technical Computing Group, and they do a number of things. And but really, it's all about the developer experience, right?
Yeah.
So the typical things that you'd expect: to be able to navigate documents, to be able to navigate code files, IntelliSense, colorization, an interactive mode, which is very cool. So be able to send something to interactive by highlighting it, and as well as a debugger. And I think the other cool part was, if I remember correctly,
it supports Dryad. Or that, I'm sorry, that's coming soon.
Yeah, so some of the other ones were, I think you can use it with some of the libraries we've talked about recently, like Show and some of the data visualization libraries. So check it out. For people that are using Python, this seems like the way to go.
Yep.
Cool. And this is, Charles sent this to us.
Yeah. So getting started with HTML5, the canvas element. So
this is Dan Wallen, basically walks through the idea of being like, you get a reference to canvas, or get context, I should say, and he walks through building just simple shapes. Right. So like the green rectangle is, you set it fill style of green, and you basically say fill rectangle and give it the dimensions. So starting at 0, 0, 200 by 100
yep.
Thing. And then what's interesting, too, is things I didn't expect. For example, like I'd assume there'd be a CTX like fill circle, but it's not. It's actually .arc. And the way .arc is, you actually have to do 2 times math pi to have it be a full arc. And otherwise, you just do math pi, for example, for that that half arc that you see in
the wonders of
corner.
Radians.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's real interesting to do. He shows some of the things like, hey, what if you want to combine these? You notice we did that begin path call. If you want to combine these, don't do that, and a bunch of stuff. But yeah, for those of you who haven't played with HTML5 Canvas, it's great.
Kind of reminds me of a turtle logo.
Kind of, yeah.
Long, long ago when I was a wee little laddie.
Yeah, I'd say the thing it definitely reminds me of is GDI.
Okay.
If you ever did GDI programming, where you're basically getting a graphics context and writing to that. But
okay, so Windows Phone market certification requirement updates. So what they did was they went through and had to adjust some wording on it. They also opened up a forum. So like an example of one of the things they changed was you can't have an application that basically launches websites. Like that's all it does.
Yeah, so it's a good if you have a website that's nothing more than a browser.
Yes. It.
What if you're building a better browser? Then I guess it's an actual app, right? I'm going to put you on the hook for all, because you clearly run the certification yeah. team and can answer
I'm sure
questions.
I'm sure Todd loves me already, so.
You want to put what? That's disgusting.
Well, another example is the small and big icon must actually be a representation of what your application does. So it's like, if you build a Where's My Car application, it should give the user context of what your application does.
So it can't be a random screenshot of Angelina Jolie.
Yes. Speaking of screenshots, that's another thing that they explicitly called out now is the stuff that you put into Marketplace, the screenshots, must be of the actual application.
Got it.
No emulator Chrome, no, you know,
Doodles. No emulator Chrome, really.
No, because this, you're supposed to submit it at 480 by 800, which is exactly what, at 100%, the emulator gives you. So by putting in the Chrome, then you're reducing the full size.
Got it.
So, and
cool. So, and people can go through and read some, a lot of the differences, but those are pretty good examples. Scott Gu did the tutorial. We probably should put this one behind the other HTML5 one, but semantic markup.
Yes.
So we talked about this in the Mix 11. Now it goes does the step-by-step classic Goo tutorial of being able to, with the tool install updates that we mentioned last week, you set HTML5.
Yes.
You use the HTML5 semantic HTML5 in the checkbox for the, I think it's new project wizard. then you can do things like header, footer, and semantic just being like, normally I'd have like table,
yeah,
like
yeah.
real old school. Now I'm semantically saying,
this
you know,
is my
this,
header,
yeah.
this is my footer.
Exactly. And then the modernizer JS library does all the things for making sure that if you do spit out those tags, that it actually changes them such that they render.
It does graceful degradation.
Yes. And Scott has examples where you see screenshots. Like, if you didn't use Modernizer, this is what your site
yes.
would look like, which is cool. And next thing.
So this is the Windows Azure Toolkit for iOS. So before we released the Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone, this is now for iOS. It's pretty much the same concept. It's all open source. And what it basically does is allows someone who wants to use Azure a quick, easy way to get up on board with everything they need already written for them. Just they need to tweak it for their application.
It's an Objective-C library,
yes,
right, for accessing those services. But they do have a sample app as well that shows how to use Azure Storage documentation. And again, everything's open source. And Wade does have a good tutorial
yes.
that actually walks through Xcode and showing how to use it.
Yeah, so you know you can. Azure is not just for .NET developers. It's for anyone that wants to use it.
Cool. Very cool. SQL Server Denali Management Studio. So this is Management Studio, which, yeah, you're using, too, for reporting, right? You've kind of become, like, a SQL guy.
I will deny that.
Or somewhat. How's that?
I can write SQL.
But font, there's a number of improvements to the IDE itself. Everybody uses, or for data people that use SQL Management Studio day in, day out,
yep.
there's a lot of improvements in codename Denali in the CTP. So just a couple of them are really inherited from Visual Studio 2010, right?
Yep.
So new font, new color scheme, multi-monitor support, which is very cool. So I can drag a script, I can drag different windows.
That is huge.
All over the place and play with them.
I'm afraid to ask how many windows I've had open on that thing.
Yeah. Now, second thing is the ability to zoom in and zoom out the 120%.
Yep.
And I haven't used it, but I assume they left in the, I think it's control mouse wheel to scroll in and scroll
yep.
out, which would be very...
I'd assume so, because it, you know, it's very Visual Studio-ish.
Yeah, I mean, it uses Visual Studio as the back end, using the Visual Studio shell.
Oops, awkward. So, okay.
Another thing, and this is just a number of IDE improvements for Denali, the coolest part is for those of you who have been doing MDX programming, multi-dimensional expressions, for, say, like a data warehouse or BI solution,
okay.
But you now have IntelliSense,
ooh.
Which is very cool and very helpful because MDX is confusing enough. So being able to have IntelliSense and know that you're operating on aggregate within it, or within a single item, for example, is
okay.
awesome.
Sweet.
So very cool. Now this is a code project article.
Yes, code project. So this is a pretty interesting one where it talks about actually how to respond to window power management events. So it's like, hey. My computer's about ready to go to sleep. What should my application do?
Mm-hmm.
I know I long ago with Vista, I built an application where if the power gets unplugged, the application responded. So this is very similar. But it's more like, hey, the computer just went back up. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So it lets you hook into, you know, like resume critical. Is the application suspending? Did it just resume, suspend, et cetera, et cetera? And then you can do whatever events you assume is necessary.
Yeah, it's basically, if you're an app developer, how do you make your app be
more
smarter
resilient?
Smarter about what it should do based on the power conditions?
Yeah.
So, like, don't...
don't encode in, you know, using all four cores with 1% battery.
Yeah, it always depends on the app. Like, maybe you want to pop up a message saying, hey, you know, you're doing encoding, and this is about to die. Do you want to save your encoding as is
yeah.
and resume? Assuming there was a cool resume encoding app, which I don't think there is. Picks of the week!
Picks of the week.
Okay,
so this is my baby, the Coding for Fun Toolkit for Windows Phone. I added in 4 new controls. The primary 3 biggest controls are all color pickers.
So I see pictures here.
So I have the three little pretty pictures. So the first basic one is a color slider. So it just, you know, goes from RGB, and it allows you to pick your color. You have both a bind and an event that you can tie to. I'm going to go to the next one, which allows you to do full spectrum color. So
I always see those color pickers.
Yes, and then because you said, hey, Clint, I want you to build out the one for Microsoft Word, I created the color hexagon picker as well.
Well, so here's the reason why. I feel like it's always a pain for maybe non-color people to get the right combination of colors. So to be able to visually see a number of things, and chances are when you're picking a color, like, within a spectrum, you can get a good amount.
Yeah, so and then what I did with the hexagon picker is you have steps to brightness and then steps to darkness. So what it does is it goes from white to the max brightness, and then you can go to dark. So like the primary example is, I think, 4 steps to brightness, 3 steps to darkness. And then I have one that where it only does bright, one that only goes to darkness, and then grayscale as well. And all of these are based on this, inherit off the same base class, so then you can easily switch between them.
Okay, so if somebody wants to customize their color picker, for example, they totally could.
Yep.
That's cool.
The entire goal.
Love it. So my pick of the week is John Papa's Boot to VHD with no host OS. So John gives a shout out to Paul Stubbs, who had done this before. But it's basically taking a clean drive with no boot OS and now to remove bootable VHDs as needed.
So when we say no boot OS, typically before to boot from VHD, you had to have Win7 or I believe was Server 2008, or is it 2008 R2?
Yeah,
one of those two.
You'd need a host OS and then set the BCD properties to be able to set it as the boot OS.
And then from there, then you can boot from VHD. So the nice thing there is then you can back up, you create snapshots basically of it, and you can back up that image. It makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, so, and I mean, I know when we were building all the demos for Mix, I drew the wrong straw and had to image.
It pays when you have to work on hardware.
all of the demo boxes.
Yeah, so,
each demo box has 2 machines.
9 computers total.
Right?
Yeah.
So
9
computers.
3 laptops.
And here's where the equation gets nasty. You have to install a boot OS, so that's 9, and then you have to install the actual VHD.
And then you have to sysprep.
And then each sysprep, because some were different machine types. So it actually was just a number of PCs to install, and we did do the try and make it easier. But
the nice thing with boot from VHD is if we screwed up one of those boxes, all we had to do was replace that VHD, boom, we're back up.
Right, exactly.
Which for us was, you know, we're back up in 20 minutes rather than a couple hours.
Yeah, reinstalling something or doing some, you know, crazy thing. And it was nice to be able to install... get everything working on one VHD, and we did sysprep the image and then send those to the different 8 machines, so that way I don't have to sit there and install Visual Studio and all the stuff, and I know the configuration of the machine when it's sysprep. So, love it. Definitely going to use this in the future.
Awesome.
So that's our show.
Cool.
Thanks,
Thank
everyone.
You.